Okay, I'm delighted to welcome to the Near FM studios Micheál MacDonnacha for Sinn Féin. Good morning, Micheál. Welcome to Near FM.
Good morning.
It's great to have you back. Busy times, I'd imagine. I'm going to touch on one or two things that are still in the news before we talk about your campaign and the election coming up towards the end of the year, or maybe early next year, depending on when when the Taoiseach decides is convenient, I suppose. First of all, the anti-water charge campaign, it's been hugely, this was one of the areas of the city where it was really, really noticeable and well run, and it's been going now, I'd imagine, the guts of 18 months around this area. Last week, the figures were released that 46% of people have paid. Is that a success for the anti-water campaign?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you're talking about some variation in the figures, but one estimate has it up to 57% have not paid. I mean, that is a disaster from the point of view of the government and Irish Water. They refuse to listen to people. They refuse to listen when the legislation was going through the Dáil. Most of all, they refuse to listen to people on the ground, especially in this area. As you said, this area really was one of the pioneering areas in the campaign. Which has been very successful. And doggedly, the government and Irish Water have refused to pay. Now, or refused to listen, I should say, and many people cannot pay and are refusing to pay. You know, this is pouring money down the drain, literally. And I believe that the campaign will succeed. I think this crazy project will have to be dropped. But who is going to pay the tab? This is the awful thing. They should really cut the losses now and stop throwing good money after bad. That there's no other way. We're pledged to get rid of the water charges and Irish Water if we're in government. There's other parties and groups the same. And I think the campaign obviously has to continue. And it'll be no doubt it'll be a big focus in the election.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd imagine it's going to be one of the main battlefields, I suppose, for the election and in this area. I wonder, though, you know, there's candidates like yourself who have the anti-water stance, but, I mean, we have other candidates too. Do you fear that maybe you might dilute the vote and it might damage all your prospects maybe in this area, because we have anti-austerity alliance candidates, we've people before profit candidates and all? I know there's other areas where you will differ, but the anti-water thing is all agree on.
Yeah, well, that's a valid question. You know, each party and group, they have their own stance in terms of lots of issues. There is, as you say, unity on the issue of opposition to the water charges. I don't think there's any prospect of, if you want to say, unity candidates or people standing down or that. So it's going to go forward. But I think, the way I would look at it on the positive side, it just shows the strength of opposition, that there are so many parties and groups and individuals out there willing to stand on this issue. As I've said, I said at a couple of public meetings on the water issue, we elected a majority of anti-water charges councillors in this area in the last local elections. And it was largely the same across Dublin. That was an opportunity for the government to say, well, hang on a second here now, we better step back, but they didn't do it, unfortunately. So, I mean, there's cooperation between the parties and groups, particularly under the Right to Water banner. And in this area, you have Communities Against Water Charges. And in fact, they have a mobilisation this coming Saturday, the 25th, in the area. So, no, I mean, I'd be positive about it. I think the more voices against it, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some other areas, I suppose, and we've only seen last week the announcements about the housing up in Balmain. I mean, social housing is another huge issue, especially in an area like this, Dublin North West or Dublin North Bay. Is that Dublin Bay North? We've seen the announcement last week about the housing in Balmain, the social housing in Balmain. Do you think is that maybe just another election trick on behalf of the government, because they've seem to have ignored the housing issue for a long time?
Well, I mean, it's an absolute utter scandal, and it is a national emergency. We often use the word emergency, crisis, etc., but there's no question about it, particularly in Dublin. you ask any councillor, any community worker, anybody on the ground, the level of housing need now is unprecedented, probably since the 1960s when mm-hmm. there was a housing crisis. In some ways it's worse now. You have families being accommodated in hotels when they're available. There's now a waiting list for emergency accommodation. You have people who have jobs who are being priced out of the rental market. There are people who, many people have contacted me, they're in work, but it's low-paid employment usually, but still, in the past, that still would have seen you through for rented accommodation. Now the rents are becoming astronomical, and there is no government action to control the rents. That's 100% mm-hmm. needed, definitely needed. They need to immediately start a programme of building and purchasing homes for the social housing list, for the council housing list. That's the only way this can be addressed.
Yeah, because we seem to be charging very much back towards the buying market, and which to me seems a tad ludicrous, because as you say, there's obviously a huge problem, with massive problem with people needing homes. But I mean, we've only seen there recently up there, just where the cemetery is up there at Balgriffin, there's new houses that are being built there, the four bedroom houses, and they're on the market for €530,000. I mean, in the situation that most people are in this country now, and if you think these homes are aimed at young couples, I mean, even with an 80% mortgage available, to even afford to put a deposit in that house, you need over €100,000. And as you say, lots and lots of people now in low-paid jobs, minimum hours jobs, jobs that where they have no guaranteed contracts, you know, they're on rolling contracts. How is that going to be sustained?
Well, it is unsustainable, and that's why the state always had to intervene mm-hmm. to make housing affordable to people. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, under the last government, they totally neglected social housing. The current government, they're only now starting to make some effort, but it's a very last minute effort, mm-hmm. and it's a very minimal effort. Mm-hmm. And as you say, some of it, a lot of it, is for the PR. We have a minister, Alan Kelly, who actually issued an edict there a couple of months ago that no social housing project could be opened without his presence, and he was even looking for councils to delay openings, such as they are, and there's very few of them until he could be present. But that's just an example. It's very, very late in the day. As I say, the state always had to intervene here. You can't, naturally enough, the developers are going to go for the big book. That's their bottom line.
Yeah.
It's not about providing housing for people on a housing list or in need. It's about maximising their return. And obviously, if that means four or five bedroom, half a million, that's what they're going to go for.
Yeah.
Unless the government intervenes, as I say, directly funds the councils, but also rent control, price control on rents. And also we have Part 5 of the Planning and Development Act, where developers are required to provide a proportion of social housing. Now, that was diluted under the Fianna Fáil government. They were allowed to buy their way out of it. Mm-hmm. There's a further dilution now, where they're talking about management companies being brought in, where the disproportion would be managed. And we have, in fact, an example in Fingal. Hopefully this is not going to be allowed in Dublin City Council, where managing this section, which is supposed to be for affordable housing, will not take people on rent supplement. So, you know, totally, totally unacceptable. But a total change is needed. And I think, you know, this is the biggest issue. The water is a massive issue.
Yeah.
But in a way, we've won the argument on that.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's an ongoing battle, hugely important. But in terms of what's really affecting people's lives at this moment, especially in Dublin, in a very, very detrimental way, to me, the housing issue is the biggest.
Absolutely, 100%. Which kind of brings me full circle then, when you talk about developers there. And we've seen, again, revelations last week about some of the stuff that's going on in NAMA. Now, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of NAMA when it was first set up was to take all the toxic debts out of the banks, so as the banking sector could get back to doing business. Most of these toxic debts were from, say, developers or speculators who'd speculated big on properties, couldn't pay the mortgages, couldn't pay the banks back, and put the whole banking sector into crisis, which the people of this country have paid to get us out of. And now we seem to be coming full circle now, where the whole NAM, we've seen, as we say, the project in the north, where the whole Northern Ireland property book was sold off for a fraction of what it was worth. Are we just gone full circle? Are we just giving this stuff back to the fellas who got us in trouble in the first place?
Well, I mean, it's hugely alarming what's happening.
Yeah.
As you say, the property portfolio in the north, you know, sell that in basically one lump,
mm-hmm.
And not break it up and maximise the return for the state is incredible. And there's all kinds of accusations now.
Yeah.
Was corruption involved?
Yeah.
And that's going to be an investigation. You know, you have the allegations of Mick Wallace and the Dáil. Again, if even a fraction of that is true,
yeah,
that's very, very serious. But this goes back to what in the Dáil, we and Sinn Féin and others said, that when NAMA was set up, that it's neither open, accountable, nor transparent. It's shrouded in secrecy.
Yeah.
There's no freedom of information. There's no access. They won't meet public representatives. We've asked, when I was chair of the Finance Committee and the City Council, we asked several times to meet them on various issues, including the, you know, different NAMA properties that they,
yeah,
that they control around the city, on the housing issue,
yeah,
on the Docklands and so on. And no, refused to meet public representatives. So, you know, when you have that, there's no checks and balances,
yeah,
about what could be going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, well, certainly no kind of... It certainly raised the question, is, hold on a minute, what's going on here? Because, I mean, as I said, my understanding of it was NAMA was set up and all of these properties were put into NAMA, and the whole point of it was when we recovered and when property price started to go up again, all of those assets belong to the people of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that now doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be the case that they're going to sell them to the first speculator that comes along for a quick buck, and then the speculators are coming along and then they're selling them for 3 and 4 times the price. I mean, who's making these decisions?
Well, that's it. I mean, and they're looking at it. It goes back to the way the housing situation was looked at. It was looked purely in market terms, whereas NAMA acquired lots of assets, which are social assets.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, supposedly they have a public interest principle in their setting up, but they haven't used that, certainly on the housing end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, very, very few housing property has ended up in council housing or affordable, mm-hmm, housing for middle to lower income families. They've looked purely at the bottom line in terms of financial.
Yeah.
And that has been very damaging. And of course, they've also kept some, you know, very... one-time high-flying developers on a life support machine with very generous salaries.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. Very true, very true. As you say, and the more it's revealed, we get more questions than we seem to be getting answers. But again, as you say, going forward with the election, these are all going to be issues that are going to be played out in a very public way, you know, and serious questions will need to be asked of our representatives, I suppose. The one other thing I want to ask you before we talk about your campaign, the election... last week, a couple of your colleagues in Sinn Féin have brought forward some legislation with regard to banded working hours. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, people will know from, well, many from their own experience, but also more widely from the Dunn's strike there recently, that we have an increasing problem where some employers, or many employers, are now operating zero-hour contracts or very low-hour, mm-hmm, uncertain,
yeah,
working hours, where people are going from week to week. They don't know what yeah, pay they're going to have. They don't know what hours they're going to work. They can't organise their lives. They can't get loans. They can't get mortgages. They can't, mm-hmm, even, in some cases, get a tenancy because they've no certainty in,
yeah,
income,
yeah,
for their rent. And that's a growing problem. So we published legislation which is for what's called banded contracts, where you would have to, the employer would have to negotiate a certain level of hours, you know, and then,
yeah,
you know, there would be different bands, say,
yeah,
10 hours or 20 hours,
yeah,
or 40 hours or whatever. And that would need legislation. So our employment spokesperson in the Dáil and in the Shannon published a bill, and we think it's very important that that's advanced, because a lot of the employment figures that we're getting, you know, oh, it's great, we're back,
yeah,
to,
yeah,
the employment is being pushed up. But how much of that is very low wage, uncertain, 0 hour to, you know, low hour contracts. We reckon a very big proportion of that, and that's doing no good for the economy. It's certainly doing no good for ordinary workers who have to endure that. And in conjunction with the trade union movement, we brought forward this legislation, which we would hope to enact if in government.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Dunn's dispute has obviously highlighted these contracts, but it would be silly for people to think it's just unique to Dunn's. It's absolute. These contracts are widespread.
That's right.
Absolutely widespread. I wonder though sometimes how we got to this. You know, how did, like, we know we had the crash and lots of people lost their jobs. Then people are desperate to work, and then they go in and these are the contracts they're offered. They're just desperate to take anything, you know. And so that's kind of created this vacuum now, I suppose, or this kind of situation where people are so desperate for work, they're prepared to take anything, but then they're at the mercy then of, you know, you know, if you go sick, if you're not at the end of a car. I mean, I know stories of guys who are on casual labour contracts, and literally you have to be at the end of a phone 24/7. Literally, right, 24/7. This guy rings you up and say, I need you to work in 4 hours time, but I'm at the being at my cousin's wedding all day, I'm a bit be here or you're done, you know. So there's a lot of that stuff going on, and it really needs to be addressed, and addressed very soon. Because I mean, I spoke to a Fine Gael minister there a few weeks ago, and they're talking about full employment by 2018. But what kind of employment is it going to be?
Well, exactly. As I say, the figures are already skewed.
Yeah.
Because it's so much, it's very, very low quality employment. But as you say, people are feeling they have no choice.
Yeah.
That you know, it's take these, or it's the dole, or it's emigration. And a lot of people just they don't have any choice. So I think, I mean, there is a big responsibility as well. And many of the unions, particularly now the unions in Dunn's and other such employments, are doing a great job. In some other cases, maybe not. You know, some people say to me, well, where is the union? In some cases, their employers won't allow a union.
Yeah.
Some cases, the unions are there, but maybe they're not doing the best job.
No.
So that needs to be looked at as well.
Is there a concerted effort with are the unions all on the one page? I mean, I know they work in different industries and different areas, and there's uniqueness in each of them. But with regards to stuff like this, because these minimum hour contracts and 0 hour contracts kind of cover all kinds of employments, is there a consensus amongst them all that we're all on the one page here?
Well, I think there is, yeah. And at that level, at the policy level, I think where it often falls down, and just people would be saying to me, is that at the workplace level, maybe the unions, in some cases, not all, by no means all cases, but in some cases, maybe they're not on the ground as much as they should be. Now, and as I say, a lot of employments, you know, they won't look at a union.
Yeah.
But even somewhere there are, they need to be a bit more active on the ground and in touch with their members.
Yeah, well, it's about, I mean, they've had tough times too, the unions, lost lots of members, and I suppose they've been in survival mode for a few years now. And, you know, if we're getting back on track now, we need to be kind of getting back behind the workers. Okay, Michael, it was announced there a couple of months ago that you are going to run in the general election in Dublin Bay North. Your plans going forward, I suppose it's going to be an exciting time, an interesting time, as we discussed, especially with a lot of the issues going forward. How are you feeling? What kind of support are you getting?
Well, very good. The response is very, very good on the ground. I think the number of people who say to me they can't wait for the election. They can't wait to punish this government and also vote for an alternative. It's going to be, I'd say, a very hard-fought election.
Yeah.
It's going to be very clear in terms of austerity, people against austerity, as you say, water charges, housing. What are the prospects really? I mean, there is a prospect for the first time of a left government, but there's also the prospect of the right coming together.
Yes.
You could be looking at Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and whatever independence that they can gather from that perspective to form a government. So that's why we're really aiming very, very high. We're running two candidates in this constituency, myself and Councillor Denise Mitchell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's it's a risky strategy, but we're aiming high because we believe that we need to maximise the number of seats in order to prevent a right wing government, and in order to ensure that there is a left government. So I'd say it's probably going to be the most interesting election in decades.
Yeah, do you think, as you say there, I mean, lots of people will vote to punish the not just the existing government, but the last one as well. People haven't forgotten the Fianna Fáil government that was there before either. Do you think, though, ultimately that it's going to come down to, in the end, a coalition of the left or a coalition of the right? We've never really had that clear defining line before, but I think
that would be the probably the best way for politics to develop.
Yeah,
you would see much more clearly where you stand. I'd say that's probably the most likely outcome, but we don't know.
That
no party is going to get an overall majority. That's certainly clear, and probably no two parties.
Yeah.
So it's going to, you're into coalition making, but in the end of the day, it's all about the policies.
Yeah.
Whatever combination of parties you have, it's all about the policies. You know, we could be involved or even lead a left government, but that's fine. But what program do you come up with?
Yeah.
What is your program? And anything like that can only work if you have a very clear program and you stick to that program in government.
Yeah, I think that's usually important as well, because it scares me a little. You know, lots of people out there are angry, and understandably, 100% understandably. But I get fear sometimes when people just say, "I'm definitely never voting for them lot anymore. I'm just going to vote for this because I'm not voting for them." I think people very, very much, and I think this election more than most in a long, long time in this country, it's going to be very important that people are very, very aware of what the parties are offering them, what kind of programs are on offer, because I think if people just go out and blindly revenge vote, I don't think that's going to be good for us in the long run.
No, it's very important that they know where the parties stand, and also independence, because there is a thing that, well, they're not really politicians, or they're not, you know.
Yeah.
And in the end of the day, whoever stands for election, you stand on your policies, and you know. It's a bit dangerous, in my opinion, voting for a candidate where you don't really know where he or she stands.
Yeah.
And it's all a bit vague. And the word "it's independent" can just take on it's like a plague on all your houses.
Uh-huh.
But at the end of the day, they're going to have to go in and decide what way they vote. Yeah. It's all one way or the other.
Yeah.
So it's very important that everybody sets out their stall.
Yeah, very clear, very clear. We've seen last week, following on from the Renewa being formed a couple of months back, we've seen another party last week, the Social Democrats. Are you expecting that maybe we might see another party or two, or another little group forming before the election?
Well, I've kind of almost lost track of the different groups within the independent section in the Dáil.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of groups and groups within groups. So possibly will. I think there's probably an element there where those groups are coming together because they feel that maybe in a situation where there are coalitions being formed, they might have better clout if they're in a group, even a loose group.
Yeah.
And they're probably not too anxious to get into any policy detail
because
they don't want to tie their hands in a coalition scenario where they might be in talks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some of them might have respect for and the work they've done. It's all, as I say, it's all back down to what you stand for, where you stand on the water charges, on housing, on workers' rights and employment. All these things are vital. And also, going back to the local, giving real power and responsibility back to local government and to communities.
Yeah.
'Cause local government has been devastated with cutbacks. We've all kinds of committees and SPCs and everything else, but actually our responsibilities are less than they would have been 10, 20, 30 years ago. So we need to give that power back to the communities.
Yeah, I think interesting you're talking about the independence there. So just thinking about, I mean, again, it's something that people are going to have to remember. I mean, back in the 80s, I think it was the 80s, the early 90s maybe, where how the independents were very much swayed. So, I mean, there will be independents, I suppose, in the next election to play their cards very close to their chest till they see what way the cookie crumbles, so to speak, and then they'll, you know, which is rightly so, probably they'll do the best for their own constituents and the people who put them in power. But sometimes we have to be very aware that much as the players change, sometimes the game stays exactly the same.
Well, this is it, yeah. This is it. And, you know, naturally enough, you're always going to have a numbers of independents who will be elected, mainly just on a local ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's fair enough, you know. And they're people that they're elected the same as everybody else. If they get the mandate, they get the mandate.
Yeah.
And people can hold them to account locally. So, you know, that's positive enough, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the big, I think the positive thing, the bigger positive aspect is that there is change happening and change coming about. The fact that unprecedented numbers came out on the streets on the water issue, and as people said, it wasn't just that. That was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Absolutely.
It was a succession of things that people had, you know, endured with little enough protest. But then they said, this is too much.
Yeah.
And they finally come out. Hopefully that will translate into political change as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's hugely important as well, that we need political change. Micheál, listen, we could talk all morning. We absolutely could. It'd be great to talk to you for hours. There's loads of things we could still talk about. Just with regards to the election campaign, do you expect we'll be looking at an election before or after Christmas?
Everybody is conflicted on this.
Yeah.
I think there's... you know, you could advance arguments for before or after Christmas. The budget is early, you know, it was October last year, it'll be, I think, in October again this year. So, you know, they could rush through the implementation of it afterwards and then go, or they could hang on. Kenny, the Taoiseach, Enda Kenny, said there during the week that he wants to run the full term, but you know, we don't know. Everybody is preparing.
Everyone's,
so it could happen any time.
Wait till the gun goes off.
That's it.
Absolutely. Listen, Councillor Micheál McDonagh, thanks as always for coming in and talking to us on Near FM. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And sure, over the coming months, I'm sure we'll talk to you a lot. And we wish you the best of luck in the campaign, whenever it be, either before or after Christmas. Thanks very much.
Go on, Margaret.